Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, May 6, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A local legislative race in Alaska has caught the attention of national media, and it's being held up as a model for political change elsewhere in the country. Jonathan Christ-Tompkins, a Democrat from Sitka, won his seat last fall by 32 votes. Christ-Tompkins was 23 years old at the time. His opponent, Republican Bill Thomas of Haines, was a four-term incumbent and co-chair of the House Finance Committee. Close elections are common in Alaska, but the April 22nd issue of The Nation magazine calls Alaska's House 34 race a lesson for the left. KCAW's Robert Woolsey spoke recently with the author and filed this report.
Russell Mochiber says he grew up in a political family and has been a political activist all his life. The last election cycle generated a huge amount of discussion about the relationship between money and politics. Much of it he considers whining.
Anytime you hear people talking about the system is out of control, money, there's too much money in politics, there's too much corporate power, my question to them is, what are you going to do about it?
He sees the election of Jonathan Christ-Tompkins as an antidote to inaction. He thinks the 24-year-old Sitkin has, by his headlong plunge into politics, demonstrated that actions speak louder than words.
You hear a lot of rhetoric about Citizens United and corporate takeover of the country, and we need a constitutional amendment, and all these big plans. Could it be that we just haven't figured out the fundamentals of democracy, how to run for and win office, even at the local level?
Mochiber is solidly rooted in the left. He edits a high-end Washington, D.C.-based newsletter called The Corporate Crime Reporter. Mochiber has covered Alaskan politics before, most notably the 2006 cruise ship initiative. One of the co-authors of the initiative, Gershon Cohen of Haines, was instrumental in urging Christ-Tompkins to make a bid for the new legislative seat recently created by redistricting. Cohen tipped Mochiber to the potential story in Christ-Tompkins' unexpected win. Mochiber then pitched it to The Nation, the country's most prestigious left-of-center magazine. His subsequent piece examined several facets of the election: Christ-Tompkins' hometown advantage, the name recognition of his mother, Dr. Connie Christ, who is well-known in the district's smaller villages, some ways that his opponent, Bill Thomas, was unpopular, and Christ-Tompkins' use of social media. None of this, says Mochiber, necessarily added up to a win.
To me, what struck me as a bigger factor was the fact that he went to almost all of the little towns around. He met a lot of people, and he was receptive. He was a listener. He connected with a lot of people face-to-face. And I think clearly, without that, he probably would not have won this thing.
This shouldn't be about parties anymore. It should be about policies and about the people that are going to be in government.
This is Gershon Cohen.
So it doesn't surprise me at all that it would be getting looked at by a lot of people around the country, and frankly, I think that's great.
Cohen was the debate coach in Haines when Christ-Tompkins was in high school in Sitka. That's when they first met. Cohen agrees with Mochiber's assertion that Christ-Tompkins won his election by making personal connections, a strategy that undermines conventional thinking about party politics in Alaska.
I think that he would have won as an independent, and I think that there's an opportunity for that to be replicated around the state. We had a lot of races in the last election where people were running unopposed, and people go, well, how come someone from the other party isn't running? And it's like, well, it shouldn't be about party. It should be about the people and about what they support and what they would do in office.
In fact, there were 7 unopposed legislative races last year in Alaska, 1 in the Senate and 6 in the House. In Mochiber's hometown of West Virginia, in the Eastern Panhandle, there were at least 10 state House delegate seats that went unchallenged, any one of which could have been won with 3,000 votes. He's hoping the lesson of Christ-Tompkins' election sinks in.
So we're starting to do a recruitment drive where we're looking for, you know, passing around the article, looking for people who it resonates with.
Mochiber is not expecting miracles at the moment. He sees Christ-Tompkins as the exception to the rule in a political environment where constituents don't always come first. He wants people to look at this election and take heart.
Now, I think he's a special young man in a special district, and not everybody who's going to take this on is going to win or even come close. But the reason it's such a good model is because he put aside the rhetoric, as far as I can tell. I mean, I don't know him. I just interviewed him. From what I could tell, he put aside the rhetoric, And he went and he listened to people. And he said, here's my card, give me a call, and if I'm, you know, if I don't answer, I'll call you back within 24 hours. I'm going to be your person in the state capitol.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Juneau police and school district officials are warning students and parents about a designer drug that's been circulating over the past several weeks. The drug is not yet on a state or federal list of controlled substances. Matt Miller reported that untested synthetic compound has already been linked to a handful of fatal overdoses around the country.
8 deaths and at least a dozen overdoses in the lower 48 in the last 15 months have been attributed to the drug called 25I or 2CI M-bomb or SMILES. One Juneau youth was nearly added to that list of fatalities, according to a parent who asked that we not divulge his name or use his voice in a story. The 17-year-old boy, described as a top student and athlete, sampled 25I during a gathering with friends in early April. It was his third experience with the drug, but this time he experienced severe seizures. An adult at the friend's house was awakened and EMTs were called. The boy's parent says he believes his son was close to death. He remained in the hospital for a day and a half. 25I is a hallucinogenic that some users say is similar to LSD. The hallucinations and euphoria can last for hours, and it may be accompanied by paranoia and a distortion of time and space. Here's a sample of experience reports found on the website Irrawid.com as read by actors.
I am looking out of my bedroom window, and the trees outside are dancing in front of me. The world becomes a work of art as the leafless branches blowing in the wind melt into an animated Van Gogh painting.
I tried to talk to G, but he was looking not well at all. His face was very bright red, almost blue, purple. His breathing was faint, and his heart seems to have skyrocketed.
I felt like time was looping. Every time someone said a certain word, I thought I'd travel back in time to when they first said it.
Other reported side effects include a spike in blood pressure, increased heart rate, nausea and vomiting, and violent behavior.
The most serious reaction we've seen involved seizures, and it's quite scary at that point.
Juneau Police Lieutenant Chris Sell says they're aware of two people who were hospitalized after taking 25I and know of another 5 youth who reported taking it. Sell says police believe the drug was acquired over the Internet. It may be available in a perforated blotter paper that's taken orally or in the form of a powder that can be smoked or mixed with a liquid to be inhaled. As with many designer drugs, the origins of 25I can be traced to legitimate scientific research.
There's a series of drugs that really started many years ago, and they're based on the compounds that create some changes in brain chemistry.
Matt Felix is the recently retired Juneau chapter director of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. He says illicit garage chemists constantly make subtle changes to compounds so that they can escape listing the drug as a controlled substance.
They're not new, even though you hear about a new one every year. It's a series of the same drug, in essence.
Lieutenant Sell says samples of 25I acquired in Juneau came back from the Alaska State Crime Laboratory as negative for controlled substances, meaning that there's no current Alaska law prohibiting its possession or distribution.
For instance, 1171-140 is Schedule 1A controlled substances.
Although the chemical compound is not on that list, District Attorney Dave Brower says someone could still be charged with reckless endangerment for providing the drug to anyone who gets hurt. Brower also believes someone could be charged with DUI if under the influence of a federally listed controlled substance.
And I guess the issue is, well, do we want to prosecute them? I mean, do we want to make that person a criminal because they're doing something that, you know, that the law hasn't caught up with yet? You know, there's a lot of controlled substances in the Alaska statute. There are more controlled substances in the federal statute.
The compounds that make up 25I are not on the federal list of controlled substances, but Jack Schmidt, an assistant U.S. attorney based in Juneau, says there is a mechanism for federal prosecution of similar substances used for human consumption. A laboratory would have to compare the drug's chemical structure to an already controlled substance. The Federal Analog Act may allow prosecution of the sale or possession of 25I M-bomb since it is similar to 2CI, another compound that is currently controlled. The parent of the 17-year-old who experienced seizures believes that the drug may be in wide circulation among Juneau youth. Sal says parents should be on the lookout for unusual or strange behavior that could lead to seizures. Don't leave the person alone. And Matt Felix of NCAD says get them to medical care as soon as possible. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
It has been a rough trip for many paddlers headed to Wrangell by canoe this week. Most encountered bad weather and rough seas on their journey through the Inside Passage. The good news is they made it. Their arrival signals the start of celebrations honoring the rededication of the Chief Shakes Tribal House. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver was a paddler on the Wrangell canoe when it landed at Shakes Island.
Dry land and friendly faces were a welcome sight for the paddlers after a long and hard journey to Wrangell. The Wrangell canoe headed to Bank Island Wednesday morning to meet the other crews. At Five Mile Island, Wrangell's crew needed to board their support boat due to dangerously rough seas. Paddlers from Kasan and Thorn Bay were already on the island when the Wrangell crew arrived. A teenage paddler from Prince of Wales became separated from the rest of his crew while on a hike in the early afternoon. Wrangell Search and Rescue responded to the crew's call in the early evening. The paddler was found safe and unhurt about 2 hours later, but he was missing for over 5 hours. The rest of the paddlers from Juneau, Sitka, Yakutat, Petersburg, and Prince of Wales arrived just before midnight. They warmed up by a large fire pit in the main bunkhouse on the island and tried to dry out many layers of wet clothing. The seven canoes left Bank Island at about noon yesterday to finish the journey to Wrangell. After a brief stop at Five Mile, the canoes lined up and paddled through the breakwater. Each canoe requested permission to land on Shakes Island.
Land your canoe here!
Wrangell elders welcomed each individually and gave them fresh water.
And that's all for Raven.